The Round Table today presents a debate on the Mont-Nixon Bill, a bill to protect the United States against un-American and subversive activities. This bill has been passed by the House and is now before the Senate Judiciary Committee. Should the Senate approve it, Congressman Charles J. Kirsten, Republican of Wisconsin, will argue for the bill, and Malcolm Sharp of the Law School of the University of Chicago will argue against the Mont-Nixon Bill. And now, Congressman Kirsten.
There is a book which I hold in my hand, the author of whom is J. Stalin. Its title is Problems of Leninism. It was published, the last edition of it was published in Moscow in 1945. It is a kind of a testament. It is the outline of the communist parties for their use all over the world. This particular edition is printed in English. On the first page of this book, there is this sentence written by Mr. Stalin. "We know, however," he says, "that Leninism is not merely a Russian, but an international phenomenon, rooted in the whole of international development." Stalin's words are echoed by Foster's in his book entitled Toward Soviet America by William Z. Foster, in which he says, "The Communist Party of the United States, in line with its program of class struggle, unites with the revolutionary workers of the world. It is the American section," says Mr. Foster, "of the Communist International." And then he goes on to say that the chief power of the party lies in the Soviet Union. So the Mont-Nixon Bill is a measure designed to meet this international phenomena, this international conspiracy that has not remained merely a conspiracy, but has gone into action to such an extent within the last few years so as to overcome the independence of about 8 European countries and threaten the independence of other countries. Now, the main provisions of
these
this
bill are... These are great boasters, aren't they, Kirsten, these communists? They exaggerate what they can do.
I don't think, Sharp, they have exaggerated it. They have called their shots. As a matter of fact, they have stated what their purposes were many years ago. They have continued to restate them, but the important thing is they have gone into action. And the bill seeks to meet that kind of a threat if it should come forcibly to the United States.
Well, don't let me interrupt you. You ought to read the bill. You worked on the draftsmanship, I understand.
Yes, I worked on drafting
the bill.
I did, Sharp.
You voted for it?
I voted for it. I assisted the subcommittee that worked on it, one of those that assisted it. Now, the main provisions of the bill are as follows. It requires the members of the Communist Party in the United States to register, and it requires Communist Front organizations to register the names of their officials only. It prohibits a member of the Communist Party...
The Communist Party must register
from,
its members' names. Is that right?
The members of the Communist Party...
Political organization.
That's correct.
Yeah.
It prohibits the members of the party from seeking employment with the government without revealing their membership. It prohibits the issuance of a passport to a member of the party, denies tax deductions to the party, and requires mail sent out and broadcasts made by it to be labeled as communist. The most important feature of the bill, however, is the provision that is one of the most important, Section 4, which provides heavy penalties for anyone who attempts to establish a totalitarian dictatorship in this country under the control of a foreign power.
But that isn't confined to communist dictatorships.
That's confined to anyone who in any manner attempts to establish a totalitarian dictatorship under foreign control in this country.
Domination of any foreign government, foreign organization, or foreign individual. Is that right?
Foreign organization.
Yes.
To set up a totalitarian organization in this country, and that phrase is defined as one, of course, which would do away with all liberties, freedom of speech and freedom of the press and so on. It's specifically defined in the preamble.
There is a definition there.
Yes, there is a definition. The Mont-Nixon Bill, in essence, is identical with laws that are on the books, but which present laws do not adequately meet the problem. It is a streamlining of the present laws so as to meet the new type of threat that threatens in various places in the world and that could threaten in the United States.
Well, we'll want to come back to some of the important provisions more in detail later, won't we?
Yes.
Go ahead with your exposition.
Well, as I have pointed out, Sharp, the The main part of the bill is a recognition of the communist conspiracy for what it is, a conspiracy that has gone into action, and that the American communists, by their own statements, by their own admissions, and by their actions, a part of the international conspiracy.
And they boast of their ability really to do something about it.
They have stated as to their ability, and in certain countries they have accomplished quite a little.
Now, how many are there in this country?
Well, as I understand it, there are from 75,000 to 100,000.
In any event, not a very big number.
Not a very large number in comparison to the people in the United States. And as a matter of fact, they're not in very large numbers in any place where they control. There are about 6 million communists in Russia, where there are 160-odd million people. And in the various other satellite countries, the parties, of course, are a very small a number.
You think that there is need for really drastic treatment, quite unusual and unprecedented treatment, as you would agree this bill is, this group?
I think, Sharp, that there is need to modernize, to streamline the present laws, the present laws do require registration, but they do not adequately require registration to meet the communist situation. For example...
If they were enforced, they would, wouldn't they?
No, they could not. Attorney General Clark came before the committee that was considering this bill, and he stated that the Voorhees Act, for example, which requires foreign agents to register, was not adequate because it was directed only at individuals. But, most important, it provides no penalty for failure to register. So, the Mott-Nixon bill streamlines that feature and does fit the Communist Party situation. And then again, the Smith Act, which is sometimes referred to as a law already on the books, does not meet the communist threat because the Smith Act provides that it must be by a provable show of force and violence, whereas the communists have taken over in many instances by other means and by force and violence.
Well, again, we should want to come back to the detail points of the existing scheme of legislation a little later. I must say that I am opposed to the bill because it seems to me to go much further than is necessary in view of what I conceive to be the present danger presented by this small group in this country with its traditions so different from those of Europe, its great wealth, its freedom from the ravages of war. Doesn't seem to me that the danger is anything like what you people in Washington, some of you, are saying it is. Seems to me you got a little excited down here. And out in the great plains of the Middle West, I have some difficulty in getting alarmed. It seems to me, on the other hand, that the bill is a violation of our traditions. It goes a long way in the direction of what's called thought control. It sets bad precedents, which at some time of crisis are apt to affect almost any minority you can think of. In some unpredictable way, we're a very volatile people, and it seems to me one of the most important things we can do is to keep good habits.
Well, Sharp, I'd like to interrupt, if I may, there. You speak of this bill being in any way a measure to provide for thought control. The common misrepresentation that is made about this measure is that it seeks to outlaw the Communist Party as a political party. The bill does no such thing. The bill outlaws their subversive activities. The bill seeks to cut off the foreign ties of the Communist Party. It does not prevent a communist from talking about communism from the housetops or on any soapbox. It in no measure seeks to stop a communist from talking.
Well, suppose we put that off for just a minute. You know you and I are going to disagree about just what the effect of the bill is.
Very definitely we will.
But I would like, before we get to that, to suggest what seemed to me to be the traditional American ways of dealing with what I conceive to be the communist problem. It's a problem of people who are dissatisfied, distressed over unfortunate conditions in this country, which we should all recognize. It's a problem, of course, partly of cranks, as any political party. The Communist Party attracts cranks. But much more seriously, it's a problem of thoughtful people who are bothered by conditions, by labor conditions. They taunt us with our monopolies. Now, it seems to me the American way of dealing with that is the way General Motors did the other day, make a sensible labor agreement. Take the unions in, give them a place, give the laboring man a place in our scheme, provide against disturbing wage effects, as the General Motors agreement did the other day. On the monopoly point, that's the thing that Americans have complained about from the beginning of our history, and attack monopolies. That communists taunt us with them now, but are we doing all we could about them? I think the Attorney General would be quite as well occupied getting up a really strong anti-monopoly program as getting these 100,000 fellas first listed in books down here and then, as I think will be the case, in jail. He'd be doing a better service to American way of life.
Well, I will agree with you, Sharp, that one of the major ways of dealing with the communist problem in this or any other country is to attend to the social necessities of the people. I think that we have in this country done a pretty good job in that respect as compared with other countries, certainly, and that there is a lot of room for improvement in the United States. I would agree with you almost 100% on the necessity of attacking the communist threat from the sociological angle. I think that must be done. But the Communist Party does exist in the United States, 100,000 of them.
Paltry number.
It's a paltry number. But if everyone is a kind of an agent, a representative of a foreign government, which I think is true, it then does not become a paltry number. The Attorney General says this about that. He says, the American Communist program is a cause for concern. The numerical strength of the party does not concern us. It is, you might say, insignificant. Their claim, however, is important that for every party member, there are 10 others in the shadow ready to fight for the party. In addition to providing, Sharp, for these sociological problems which exist, we must also prevent the Communist Party, and that's all this bill does, prevent them from operating under the directions of foreign control, and we seek to bring them out into the open. In other words, if they wish to be a political party, then for goodness sakes, what objection can they have for being known for what they are, like any other political party?
Well, let's look at some of the bad effects that this measure might have. Conceivably, it'll have some good effects, though I'm not ready to concede very many. But let's look at some of the bad effects it may have on our habits. Take this section 4. I think I'll read it. Shall be unlawful for any person to attempt in any manner to establish in the United States a totalitarian dictatorship, direction and control of which is to be vested in or exercised by or under the domination or control of any foreign government, foreign organization, or foreign individual. Totalitarian government, totalitarian dictatorship is defined in a, what I should consider a vague way that we'll have to leave our listeners to read the bill themselves on such matters. I should say in a rather vague way, in a preamble, but this is not confined to communist dictatorships. In some strange twist of opinion, we may find a Ku Klux movement, such as I can remember, though perhaps you can't, in the early 20s, when representatives of the church, Catholic Church, were thought of as being engaged in establishing a totalitarian government by some crazy, I grant you, some excitable people in this country. You can't be sure what twist events will take. And I thought Mayor O'Dwyer, prominent Catholic layman, was very wise the other day in his insistence that this conservative group for which the Catholic Church speaks ought to think twice about sponsoring legislation of this
sort. Well, Sharp, you have mentioned the Catholic Church, and in the farthest stretch of the imagination, I don't see how this measure could be applied to that organization or to any other legitimate group in the United States. As a matter of fact, the magazine America, which is a Catholic magazine, a very prominent one, very objective magazine, has editorialized on this bill. They have favored this bill, and so has Columbia, the magazine of the Knights of Columbus.
Oh, I know well.
So has the Christian Science Monitor.
Oh, yes.
And a number of other...
Oh, yes, I know that well.
They've come out in favor of this measure as an effective measure to deal with the communist international conspiracy.
Oh, I know. There's a great deal of church feeling behind it. All I'm saying is...
Not only church, but the American Legion has come out in favor.
Well, all I'm saying is I think Mayor O'Dwyer was a wise churchman, a layman, but a wise one.
Well,
that this was not in the Catholic long-run interest.
The trouble about Mayor O'Dwyer's statement was that it was a very general statement. He attacked no specific provision. Most of the attacks, as a matter of fact, have been very general in nature. And most of the defenses or most of the expositions of this bill have been quite specific, a clearing of the air as to what the bill really is. As a matter of fact, the Daily Worker has been for some weeks and even months now, has been seeking to misrepresent this bill all over the United States.
Well, I'd like to know more about this totalitarian dictatorship. You see, the Franco regime is a model totalitarian dictatorship, which has, after all, had the support of the hierarchy, though not of many churchmen, these many years.
Well, I would ask for a little proof on that. Maybe you aren't prepared to offer it, but I don't think that is correct. That the Franco regime as such has been has received any formal support of any church.
Well, anyone who was concerned with the lifting of the embargo to Spain, in the days when Spain was getting us ready for Munich, the war of 1939-1941,
of course, if we,
knows
if,
what
if,
the
if,
opposition was.
If we did get off into the Spanish question here, it might be pointed out that was a conflict that also involved the communists and the Communist Party, as implemented by the Russian army, also.
Well, of course, we can't get into all that. I just suggest that there are conservative interests. Seems to me that the rich, to whom Mr. Truman referred in his speech the other day, are also concerned in this, although they may not think so at the moment. There was a time back in the late 30s when some of the most prosperous folk in the community, seeing planning, central planning getting underway, were very acutely aware of the importance of civil rights for the prosperous members of the community. We're going to have some rabble-rousing. One of their great safeguards may be good habits with respect to matters of this sort. It's not only the Communist Party that's interested here.
Well, Sharp, I don't see how you can torture the language of this bill.
No, I'm speaking. I'm not saying now that the bill would do
it. Oh, I see.
I'm talking about the habits of tolerance and of not jumping on people who are unpopular.
You see, Sharp, what we're dealing with here is an international conspiracy which attempts to set up a dictatorship in every country where it gains power that would destroy all of the liberties for which you and I contend. We're both for freedom of speech,
for
freedom of the press.
Against them,
but
against them.
I don't think that either one of us would vote for the freedom to destroy freedom.
Well, any freedom is likely to turn out to be a freedom to destroy freedom. That's one of the most curious things about freedom, as a matter of fact.
Well,
it does happen.
We must, as reasonable men, be able to draw the line.
Someplace we set the line.
As Justice Holmes, I believe it was, said in the Schenck case, one has not the freedom of speech to go into a theater and shout fire.
That's right. And if there's a present danger here...
Yes.
Of course, that's partly a public policy point, partly a constitutional point. I think the bill is unconstitutional, myself, because I think it would be impossible to show a present danger of the sort necessary to justify its interferences with freedom of discussion, freedom of speech. The Supreme Court has said that freedom to make a speech without registering first, in the case of a labor leader, Mr. Thomas of the auto workers, that was part of the freedom protected by the First and the 14th Amendments. And to interfere with it, you have to have a showing of a very clear and present danger to the ordinary processes of government. Now, I don't think you can prove that. You can recite it, I know. You've got an elaborate recital here. But can you prove it?
We've had a great deal of discussion, and others have discussed, as to whether or not we're dealing with a political party. Now, Mr. Stalin and others who speak with authority as to the nature of the Communist Party, they very openly admit that the Communist Party is not a political party interested in such things as the mechanics of elections and parliaments. He has stated so, and I'd like to have you read his book, Problems of Leninism. He states that the function of the party is a revolutionary one, not a parliamentary one. That its function is to establish firm ties with the liberation movement in other countries, and to act in such a way as to overcome the government and attain power.
We've been talking very largely so far about general social policy, and we're merging now onto the lawyers' points that people make about the bill. And I suppose there are two or three of those, three or four of those, perhaps. There's this large freedom of speech point.
Yes.
There's the point about vagueness in the definition of criminal offenses. There's the point about extensive delegation of powers to the Attorney General. There's the question as to whether the bill outlaws the Communist Party, which it is at great pains to avoid saying it does.
Yes.
At any rate. I don't suppose we can cover all the legal points raised by the bill, even begin to this morning. It's enough if our listeners go back to the bill themselves and think about it in the light of this discussion. It seems to me two or three of these things are important. There's the present danger test. There's this vagueness of definition. The bill refers to communist front organizations and says you can tell when a communist front organization exists by looking at the position taken or advanced by it from time to time on matters of policy. And people are subject to penalties if they don't register, if they're at least if they're executives of a communist front organization, president or secretary. But how does a president or secretary know whether he is or not? Matters of policy. Position taken or advanced by it from time to time on matters of policy. The Communist Party complains of deprivation of Negroes, civil rights, so does Mr. Truman. Communist Party believes in Social Security, so does Mr. Truman. Believes in housing, so does Senator Taft. It believes in efforts to avoid war, so do other public leaders. What happens in case your party comes into power and we get to talking about Democrats or Democrat supporting groups?
Well, I don't think that there is the farthest stretch of the imagination under the terms of this bill. Could it be included? Any of these organizations that you refer to? If an organization is a communist front organization and it does not register, it is true, it is then subject to penalties. But, and this is the important thing, the Attorney General must then go into court and he must prove not only does it follow the communist line, not only is it identical with the communist line, but he must prove that it is under the control of the Communist Party. He must have factual proof on that score. And only then, under the rules of criminal evidence, could the officials of a front organization be prosecuted.
Well, now, Kirsten, this looks to me as though if a communist front organization or an organization might be considered so guessed wrong under this vague definition, it would be subject to very serious penalties. This is one of the few points in which it seems to me the bill is perhaps not quite carefully drafted. Otherwise, it's a very carefully prepared lawyer's job, whatever else you may think about it.
Well, I think you fail to sufficiently take into consideration, Sharp, that in order that the officials of a front organization be prosecuted, that the Attorney General would then have to go into court and prove that it is under the control of a communist party.
Well, it's possible, but
That would be necessary in order to convict.
This is one of the lawyer's problems about the bill.
Yes.
And if they've guessed wrong, the Attorney General, of course, is given very extensive powers. Reminds you of the worst features of the NRA in
some
respects.
Well, now on that, Sharp...
Organizations he can drag in under this vague definition.
Right now, Sharp, the Attorney General is in the practice of publishing lists of subversive organizations.
Yes, I understand.
He has done that from time to time.
Yes.
Now, this here... rather than giving him broader powers, restricts his power in that regard. It requires that an investigation first be made. It permits the organization to offer any evidence that it desires. And he makes a finding, and he makes an order that it must register. And thereafter, that's subject to appeal to the United States Supreme Court. Now, isn't that a better way from the lawyer's viewpoint, rather than to publish lists from time to time?
Yeah.
The important thing is, Sharp, with these organizations, the people should know what they are. They should know that if they're contributing money to an organization, whether or not it is under the control of the Communist Party.
Yes, but I don't want the Attorney General deciding whether an organization is a communist front organization in the light of the position taken or advanced by the organization from time to time on matters of policy. I've heard people call communists by their opponents on vast variety of issues. Generally meant they were unpopular with the opponents, kind of a swear word. And I wouldn't be sure that we couldn't get into a frame of mind in which that sort of definition would work into the law. I hope not. There's another point that we oughtn't to miss before we get through. I'd like to know why you people are so coy about saying that you're outlawing the Communist Party. You write communist with a small C all through the bill and refer to communist political organizations and communist front organizations. Senator Stassen said the other night that he was for the bill because it outlawed the Communist Party. Senator Dewey said he was... for it because it didn't. I think myself, Senator Stassen read the bill right. Governor Dewey, I don't know just what kind of position he was taking.
Well,
perhaps I misrepresent his position. Some people say he didn't endorse it, but it seemed to me he did.
Sharp, I think the thing that must be said is this in that regard. The bill does not outlaw the Communist Party as a political party. It does outlaw their subversive activities. Now, the people in the United States, the Congress or anybody else, you or I, can't help something that the communists seek to do, if they seek to be the agents of a foreign power, they've created the problem. They may call themselves a political party, and they could be a political party, but this bill seeks to cut off the foreign ties of the Communist Party, the foreign ties that they do say they have, admit they have, and that Marshal Stalin says that they must have, too.
Well, it seems to me you've got practically a congressional finding of guilt, the Communist Party and all its members. You've got them defined for purposes of registration very closely. It's like saying the man with red hair and a brown mustache and a wart on the side of his nose has committed a murder. You've got them defined so closely in your bill. They've got to register, and then when they register, they're faced with the rather severe penalties of Section 4, which are 10 years or $10,000 or both, I believe.
Well,
so of course they won't register. They'll go underground.
Of course, they're already underground, Sharp. Mm. And this bill is designed to put labels on them so that the American people will know what they are. It does not prevent them from talking communism from the rooftops, as I mentioned a moment ago. But it does provide that they be labeled as such. And I think the American people are entitled to know if they're hearing from a communist-controlled organization.
Well, I don't think we shall hear from them at all. I don't think they will go on the rooftops. They will be persecuted, heroes to some people. We've tried suppression. Various countries have tried suppression at various other times in history. It seldom worked. I suppose, actually, we ought to come back to this international situation before we get through, because that is over the whole scene.
Yes, it is. This bill, of course, does not seek to suppress the Communist Party. It seeks only to cut off its connections with a foreign power. It seeks to cut off its connection as an international conspiracy, and it attempts to bring them from underground by requiring their registration. There is a great deal of information, no doubt, in the hands of the FBI and other organizations, prosecuting organizations, as to who are some of the officials of the Communist Party. And if they fail to register, they thereby will be subjecting themselves to prosecution.
I suppose in the end, this question goes back to our different positions with respect to the Cold War and its objectives, a matter which take another roundtable to discuss.
Yes.
Seems to me there's plenty of legislation on the books now to take care of the really serious threats, apart from the danger that we may be on the edge of a hot war. You think that a very strong, a very stern, a very unyielding position is most likely to produce peace. In the end, I am inclined to a more conciliatory position, and I deplore this sort of legislation as a means of whipping up trouble, which perhaps 5, perhaps 10, perhaps 15 years from now may break in the form of a really destructive world war.
I don't think that we can afford to wait until the axe is raised over our heads, Sharp. I think that it being a part of an international conspiracy, we must recognize it as such. And I think that we as American people, are entitled to protect our freedoms of speech and of the press, all of our liberties, against those who would establish in this country a dictatorship, wiping out all of these freedoms.
Thank you, gentlemen. You've been listening to the University of Chicago Roundtable discuss the Mundt-Nixon bill with Representative Charles Kirsten, Republican member of Congress from Wisconsin, and Malcolm Sharp of the Law School of the University of Chicago as participants.